Hello, everybody. Welcome to Old and New Movie Review.
We lit.
And I am Jake, joined by
Sam.
Juan.
And then over chilling in the background, he's kind of just going to be the guy chilling in the background
with the drink.
New guest.
His name's John.
Hello, people.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a 2020 beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm. Big year.
I know. First year of the 20s.
Big year.
As we're going to do a movie podcast cliche and talk about our favorites of the year.
Needless to say, we're going to do a movie podcast.
Yes. We're going to do best and worst of the year. We have a lot of stuff to talk about.
We're going to talk about stuff.
I know. We're going to go deep on light. Now, I don't know what format we should talk about this stuff in. Do you want to do the honorable?
I think we should just kind of just let it roll and just
let
talk
it roll.
About, I mean,
you
what
it.
Pops out first? I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, you want to do honorable mentions first or the list first? Let's do honorable mentions first.
Yeah, let's talk. Let's do honorable mentions.
Okay.
I think, because
you want to go?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Okay,
so
I'll
do you want me
off
to start with mine or yours?
Oh no, I'll go with mine.
Okay.
Movies
we're going right into it.
Yeah, exactly. Movies I really liked that missed my list just by a hair. Shazam would be one of them. John Wick 3 would be one of them.
Didn't see it.
Well,
I saw Shazam. So I mean, I did not see Shazam. I saw John Wick 3.
Oh yeah, John Wick 3 is in honorable mentions.
No, I didn't see
Joker.
John Wick 3.
Joker.
I didn't see either. No,
Joker is in my honorable mentions. Knives Out is in my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
All very good movies, just not movies I loved.
Yeah.
And for you,
we share an honorable mention of being the Joker, which I think is the only one that we share, because the other honorable mentions I didn't see. Because I don't know, I don't know. I have a little bit of like a wall with if I'm not sure about a movie, I'm usually not going to go see it, or I'll see it in a more casual sense.
Yeah.
Other than like I don't want to formally go see it at a theater. So
yeah, it's hard
that,
for
so
you.
I sort of end up missing out on movies, and I don't want to sound like a fucking Jew.
Oh my god, that's gonna be hit on post. I don't want to be hit on anti-Semitic remarks.
But I don't really want to go spend $13 to go see a movie I'm not sure about. You know, I'd rather see something I actually want to go see, which you know some people might not be, you know, share the same opinion.
I mean, it's a little different now that you're actually like a guest on a movie podcast.
Yeah, I'm a guest on a movie podcast, but I'm a casual movie goer and I'm a casual guest.
That's what I like.
Exactly.
Well, not yeah.
So, but anyway, so
and then
our,
go more into depth into your honorable.
Yeah. Mind. So, my honorable mention was The Joker, and Joker was a movie I really enjoyed. I walked out being like, because obviously there's a lot of controversy behind Joker, which was hilarious. especially just like, you know, I mean, if you're a type of person who's been on the internet at all in the past, like, you know, 2 years, there's a lot of like silliness behind like just the Joker as a character,
Veronica.
And I think some of those like lusts for us like kind of got quenched when we did see the Joker to the like the society type shit, you know, that was like, especially when he screams, "We live in a society!" And I think Juan had like a full blown orgasm.
I really did.
Yeah.
Gang Weeders rise up for sure.
Yeah. And we were gonna go to the Joker movie with shirts that just said Veronica across it. And
we should have went to Society after the movie.
Yeah, we should have.
Where we
live,
there's an actual nightclub called Society.
Yeah. For those listening, there's a nightclub called Society directly across from the movie theater that we were seeing the Joker in.
Yeah, the movie
so
theater.
So it
would
have been a good
move,
probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean I would say Joker's an honorable mention for me because I enjoyed the movie.
You did like it a lot. I remember
I did enjoy it. There is a part, there is something that comes with movies and TV shows and really any kind of media that has a big media storm behind it that I don't know if it's me or if it's like what it is, but I tend to sort of like actively rebel against it. Like if there's a big fandom or anything. I mean, that's a big gripe with you, with me and my sort of like disliking for, for Disney.
Alert.
Yeah, it's kind of hipster pretentious.
I've grown
bullshit,
a little bit
I'll
more mellow, but again, I'm in an interesting position because I'm not a diehard fan of Marvel and stuff. I just love certain movies they made.
Exactly. So. You're more objective, and whereas
yeah.
I'm honestly I'm more at fault about it, but and I'll own that.
Yeah, yeah.
But to tie that into the Joker, you know, there was that media storm behind it. You know, when we went to see it, actually, there was like actual cops.
I know, right?
At the movie theater,
and
checking
like,
people's tickets
and
stuff.
The first time in a while, first time since we saw the first It, where there was actually a lady at the door carting people.
Yeah, there's people.
We saw It that they did that. Remember?
Yeah, yeah. There were people being carted, and also, when we went to see The Joker, it was we saw it on release night, and it was a big profile movie, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people were talking about it. A lot of people were excited to see it. And then we went into the theater, and I think we were maybe one of five people.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's weird because it made a lot of money.
And I think the thing, I think it was just sort of a part of the paranoia that there was going to be like sort of like a repeat of the
Dark Knight Rises.
The Dark Knight
actually,
Rises.
And it's actually funny because The Dark Knight Rises.
Right. And I think that's the real paranoia. We, and
the theater that showed Dark Knight Rises where that happened, they refused to show the Joker movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it was kind of eerie almost. We're kind of like, what? Like it was really strange.
And then, because we're
talking
about...
Did it take away from the movie?
No, not at all. I remember, like, well, at the time when we were seeing the movie, I remember we were, like, sitting in the theater and we're kind of like, wow, there's nobody here. That's kind of strange. Like, this is, like, a big profile movie and there's nobody
watching. First R-rated movie to make over $1 billion.
Yeah, and I remember kind of putting two and two together and being like, oh, people are paranoid about being shot.
It was funny
like,
when
there's no way that's going to happen. Just for those listening, Jacob has a clap-on lamp, and his lights just went off, and he had to put the lights on. Anyways,
we're gonna be talking about Joker later in the podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
I don't know, we can let the lights off, make it a little more sensual.
Keep it dark.
Mm.
Okay.
Sorry, one other honorable mention, which for worst.
Let's do best, and then we'll take a break and go back to worst.
Okay, but I have an honorable mention for worst.
Oh yeah, you want to talk about it.
Yeah, because I have two honorable. So my honorable mention for worst was The Fanatic.
That's an honorable
with John
mention.
Travolta.
Because it is hilarious.
It's funny in a way.
I mean,
it's not as painful to watch. It's just like, holy shit.
Like, why is this
This is
thing?
The guy from Pulp Fiction.
I know. Well, like, Chris Stuckman.
Doing this.
You can't compare everything he does to Pulp Fiction.
I know, but I mean, like, you
That's just not fair to him, though.
But you kind of have to in a way, because you look at Pulp Fiction, and you look at what he's doing here, and you're like, what the fuck happened? Like, this is so silly. Like, how could you even sign on? Scientology.
I know, that's what it is. I mean,
L. Ron Hubbard and
Chris
Stuckman, wet mouth.
Chris Stuckman's review hyped...
Way to end on a high note there.
Yeah.
Chris Stuckman's review hyped it up for me a little bit too much.
What?
Chris Stuckman's review hyped it up for me a little bit too much.
Yeah, well, we watched it.
Yeah,
and
he kind of showed all the high points.
It spoiled all the high points, and we watched it, and we're like, okay, yeah, you could just watch the video.
Don't watch The Fanatic, just watch Chris Stuckman's review of The Fanatic.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely don't waste your time with The Fanatic. The review's funnier, and if you haven't checked out Chris Stuckman's channel, I mean...
Highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it. He's great. I mean, chances are, if you're listening to this, then you probably already know.
Yeah, I know about it. But a great reviewer. One
if
of the
you're
best,
in, the underground,
best
in the underground movie podcast scene, then... Very deep underground.
So, movies I love this year. I love Knives Out, great murder mystery. I love Shazam, great. Super
Did we give
movie.
Juan his honorable mentions?
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of going over mine.
Again. Okay.
Because I didn't really go into detail. Queen and Slim was another one I love. I'll let Juan go into the honorable mentions now.
Mm-hmm. All right. This paper. So, for me specifically, an honorable mention for the best was Spider-Man Far From Home. I think, ooh, in terms of an animated movie, it's probably the best that's come out this year.
It's not animated.
Far From Home? Oh, sorry. What am I thinking about?
Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that's very animated. But yeah, as far as that's one of the best to come out this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good follow-up to Endgame. Yeah. Like, a good epilogue.
I want to make a comment on that movie. Like, the beginning of it threw me a little
Needless
bit off.
Needless to say, I run a check.
Who's
No. That's Post Malone, my guy.
Yeah.
Intro Spider-Verse.
I guess
we can
combine both the Spider-Man movies.
We get to combine all Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
But they're both good. And then your runner-up for worst?
For worst was actually a Lion King. It's because there's no heart behind it.
There's a lot of hurt behind the Lion King.
Lion King's on my worst of
yeah.
list.
Yeah, I know people
I really
who are
like,
oh, I love the Lion King.
Well, because they didn't do anything. Okay, we'll talk about that when we get to the list.
Timon and Pumbaa.
I'm kind of going to... We're each gonna now.
Who do you
I,
think is Timon, and who do you think's Pumbaa? Out of all of us,
we have four people. How are we gonna decide between two
all
characters?
50-50. Some of us are Timons, and some of us are Pumbaa. Has to be.
I Pumbaa this bitch.
So,
do you think Pumbaa wears Pumas? Sorry.
Okay, so let's kind of go into the best of list right now, and I actually have a top 10 right now. So I'm going to kind of just go briefly in my... not briefly, but I'm going to go...
Before we say that, Jacob here, I don't know... Y'all can't really see it, so I'll try to paint a picture. He has a Disney poster above the studio right now. And it's all the characters, really, up to this point. They exclusively cut out Tarzan's voluptuous bulge.
And I really did.
I'm very butthurt about
and
it.
And see, the thing is about it is that, like, he's wearing a loincloth, so that, like, he's super hunched over, like, in, like, a full, like, Chinese, like, hoon squat right now. And his like, if he was wearing a fucking, what's it called? I just said it.
Loincloth.
Loincloth, thank you.
You just said it.
Yeah, yeah. So, he's wearing a loincloth. His ball sack.
Those nuts.
Yeah, his ball sack would be fucking full flare out right now. Which is why I feel like they cut it off.
Disney's being
that voluptuous half man, half ape ball sack.
He's not half ape.
I mean, on the same side.
Absolutely.
On the
full
opposite side, you have fucking Lion King going on.
Here's a question for you guys. Do you think Tarzan drops massive loads?
How's that a music question?
I said music. I said, just said a question.
Oh, probably.
How big do you think Tarzan's nut is?
I mean, have you had experience with it?
In fucking... Does fantasy count? Fantasy. I have the Phil Collins Tarzan soundtrack on CD.
Well, if you wrote a Tarzan fan fiction.
Oof. What, am I? Am I Jane?
My Jane.
I think you'd make a better Jane. I could picture you in like the white dress.
I feel then like what are you?
You would be the scientist dad who's just watching them doing it in the background.
Tarzan voyeurism.
Oh God. Oh boy. So yeah, let's get right into the list after that. Yeah, I'm gonna go through my top 10, and then when I get to the top 5, we're gonna kind of just go do round robin through it.
Round robin?
Yeah, round robin.
Yum.
Yum. Okay, so, my number 10 of the year was, I don't think a movie you guys saw, it was, Under the Silver Lake.
But let's all do a shot for,
for a shot sake.
For this year, for the movie 2020. We did.
Yeah, I don't have a shot glass.
For the podcast, we'll just take it right out of the bottle.
Fine.
Yeah. All
right. Moment of silence.
It's Malibu. It's like 20%. This might as well be Capri Sun as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, so into the list. My number 10 is Under the Silver Lake.
See, that's one I have not seen. And I really would like to see because I was a huge fan of It Follows.
Yeah, and same director. His sophomore effort.
Yeah. And,
huge year for sophomore effort.
And it did really well. It was in a lot of critics' top 10s.
Yeah, yeah. It was very art house, but I really liked it. Yeah. And it's funny because you don't like Andrew Garfield. And,
no, because his hair is stupid, and
but
it bothers
he's
me.
Good in that movie.
And he's got a little head and a whole bunch of hair, and just bothers me.
But that movie was excellent, I thought. I loved it.
But he was good in The Social Network, I'll give him that.
And he's good in Hacksaw Ridge, too.
Yeah, but that I don't fuck with that movie. It's a good
love that movie.
It's a good movie, like, it was like some like Mel Gibson Christ movie,
oh,
and it's like it's transparent when like you. Like,
but it's well made. That's
it's well
problem.
Made, but when you know what it is, and you're watching,
I mean,
it's okay.
It's direct about what it wants to be about.
Mel Gibson's jerking off to fucking Psalm 338 right? as he's writing this shit. It's just like, you know.
Oh my God.
And they, you know, like you watch like Mel Gibson movies, like you watch Braveheart. They all have that sort of like emotionally tugging, like, slow run moment through. Like, he's like, the bullets aren't touching
him. In Apocalyptica.
Yeah.
So this man does religious films.
He does heavily religious films.
Well, Apocalyptica is like the most.
And I'll fuck with that because I ride with Satan.
So Passion of the Satan? Passion of the Christ is a biopic tape. But, I mean, coming off from, you know, doing Hacksaw Ridge, he does Under the Silver Lake.
No, Hacksaw Ridge was a good movie.
But you should definitely check out Under the Silver Lake. I don't want to say too much, but it's a very good mystery movie.
Well, I gotta put it out there that the amount of movies you've downloaded for me and given me on thumb drives and I haven't watched, like, Under the Silver Lake was one, fucking so many movies that
I'm
supposed
to
watch.
For you
make it
so
easy for me,
them.
And it's just it's my own fucking fault because I'm a dirtbag.
But so. Okay, number 9. I'll be talking. Did you see this movie? Number 9, Midsommar.
It's somewhere. I actually didn't, but I saw a lot of the hype.
Me and Sam, I kind of. Well, if you want, since it's your number 5, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. You want to talk about it now, or are you?
Well, yeah. Actually, well, because most of the movies on my list kind of cross into yours, so.
Yeah, we have a lot of the same.
Yeah. So.
My favorite was Love, Simon 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Well, I'll give my piece and then I'll let you. But
he gets his gay sex again.
But my number 9 was Midsommar, which amazing horror movie, absolutely amazing. Really, so to describe Midsommar, it's basically kind of a simple plot. This girl goes with her boyfriend because one of his friends is going to his family's Swedish festival, whatever. But I love how it's filmed. That's probably the best part about. Midsommar. Just
the filming was great. Just, the filming was super good.
The atmosphere. That's why I love Midsommar. It's just such an atmospheric movie. It really brings you into that
perspective. Super atmospheric.
Like, it's just an experience. Yeah. Like,
I love the way, because I think something about, like, because with Midsommar, obviously it's like a weird Swedish cult, and they're like, you know, drugging them and making them like do all these weird, crazy, sex oriented, you know, disgusting shit, well, and they're killing them and shit. So. I felt like it sort of fell following Hereditary, which is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. I think it fell more into the umbrella of your more standard horror movie, whereas like people are dying sort of like progressively, and it's like there's this and that, and there's a weird circumstance, whatever. But the thing I think that they emphasized that was really interesting in Midsommar was the use of drugs when. With actual cult indoctrination, because that's actually is because for example, which is a really good example, there's a cult in my hometown of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Shout out
all the boys out there, fucking hell yeah. And
keep it real.
So there's a cult out there called, I believe it's called the 12 Tribes. They have they're in Oregon and shit too, in Washington, but they have restaurants called the Yellow Deli, which is open 24 hours, and so it's very popular. They have really good food and shit, but the way they started doing it, so I've heard, you know, this isn't fact, so, you know, 12 Tribes, if you don't hit me with that fucking copyright, or demonetization or whatever.
If I get sued for copyright infringement.
Yeah, by the 12 Tribes. But, they apparently they would look for people that were on acid.
Really?
At like, concerts, and they would, like, start fucking with them, and they give them more acid. Like psychedelics have been used to bring people into cults for like a while, as far as my knowledge goes. So it was kind of cool, I think, how they like used drugs.
Is that why you've been offering me acid?
Cult of Sammy, baby. All we're gonna do is grill and fucking play rugby out on the backyard.
Well, I mean, the sickest cult. That scene where they take mushrooms was really good, because I never took mushrooms, I've taken LSD, and it's a bit of a similar feeling, everything gets stretched out.
Yeah, I think they portrayed, like, the feeling of psychedelics really well, especially the visual distortions, because a lot of people, the real misconception, at least for me, with psychedelics, because I haven't done, like, you know, as many psychedelics as, you know, a real seasoned veteran, but I've done a lot of psychedelics. Yeah, I've done a lot of psychedelics, though, and, I find, you know, the portrayal, especially in, like, you know, mainstream movies, tends to be more like unicorns. Oh, no. Like, that shit doesn't happen. It's much more, it's very confusing and disorienting, and a lot of visual distortions. And I think they did it probably the most accurately out of any movie I've ever seen.
Oh, I agree. Personally. And, like, I'm coming from someone who kind of.
You sauce me another spike seltzer there, bud.
Yeah. Gotcha. And I'm someone who actually kind of liked Midsommar a little bit more than Hereditary. They're both on a very similar level.
Yeah.
In a level of
well, Hereditary just had a personal effect on me.
Yeah, and Midsommar.
And I still can't define it to this day, but it had a really personal effect.
And, like, for me, like, Midsommar, it appealed because it. For someone who doesn't really have a belief in the supernatural, that realism aspect really got to me. The fact that, like, it's played, like, this is totally, like, could yeah. happen. This, like, really weird cult. And it went in, like, such good directions. You know, it was like an experience.
There was a supernatural element to Midsommar, though.
A little bit, but it was, like, subtle. You know, it wasn't. I felt it was like Hereditary is definitely about supernatural.
Yeah,
like straight up.
Yeah, Midsommar, well, it's about like an occultist.
Oh, exactly. You know, lady, and but like Midsommar was much more subtle in how it did it.
Yeah.
And then I love that aspect about it. It's very much an experience movie, which I love. Like kind of like a movie like Mulholland Drive. It's really not about story or linear structure. It's just more about just experiencing.
By the way, don't ever watch that movie on a plane.
Don't watch Mulholland Drive on a plane.
Yeah, I made that mistake one time, and so there's three, I think there's three lesbian sex scenes in Mulholland Drive.
Well, there's two, and then one where she touches herself.
Yeah, so there's...
Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, to watch Mulholland Drive, there's some great lesbian sex scenes.
Oh, wait,
don't watch it on a plane, because one time I you gave me the thumb drive. I was going to Canada, and you were like, oh, you should watch Mulholland Drive, and I watched it on the plane, and there was a lesbian sex scene came on. And I was sitting in the aisle seat, and it was nighttime. It was like a red eye, so like it was like my like laptop computer was like lighting up the whole cabin. And I was watching it, and I was just like, "Dude, I'm not gonna be a bitch. I'm not gonna skip through this." And I'm gonna let it ride out. Yeah. And then it went on. Then it went on. I kind of skipped the end, and I was like, "Okay." And then like not that soon after, there was another really vigorous lesbian sex scene. And I was, like, trying to still muscle it out. Like, so I, like, I don't know. Like, there's a part of me that's like, if you skip, like, try and skip through it, you're going to look like you're...
Still muscle.
Yeah. Oh, wait, what do you have to say to David Lynch if he's listening to this podcast?
David Lynch, if you're listening, I love your choice in hats.
What hats does he wear?
I think you're, he wears, like, strange, like, beanies sometimes.
David Lynch, if you're listening, what your obsession with the 50s, I love.
David Lynch, if you're listening, I want to know what your favorite place to go to lunch is so we can do that.
He's born in Montana.
Montana?
Yeah.
So he's into those Rocky Mountain oysters.
Can we get back to the vigorous lesbian sex scene?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So, yeah, I was watching this vigorous lesbian sex scene on a plane, and eventually, it kept going and going and going. I swear to God, it was 10 fucking minutes, and I was sitting there in the aisle seat, like, not really knowing what to do, not wanting to skip through it, and then just being like, completely folding and just skipping through it, and it went on and on and on and on until I finally got through it. It's like, holy fuck. And then not long after, there was another fucking sex scene of some sort, and I was like, I literally look like I'm watching fucking porn on this plane by myself at night in the aisle seat.
Like, is that legal?
That's not the vibe I'm trying to put out right now.
Masturbating on an airplane is technically legal, but just frowned upon.
Thank you, Alan from The Hangover.
Well,
is that an actual legal fact?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you can masturbate on an airplane. Yeah. Isn't it technically masturbating in public?
Well,
what if there's a child in the area?
Oh, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. Yeah, I've never done it, so
I want to know the legal pretense behind masturbating on an airplane.
Out in the open, if a child saw that, that'd probably be you could go in prison. I'm reporting you right now as we speak.
You could go in prison.
Oh my
God. You go in prison, you die.
Okay, hear this. So Midsommar, 4 out of 4 stars.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was
and
great.
And then you'll probably go into a little bit more detail when we get to your part of the list.
Yeah, I can. I mean, I think I went into good.
Actually, we did. Yeah. Well, if I bring up a movie that's on your guys' list, just go with it.
Yeah.
All right. So number 9 is Midsommar. Juan, you have not seen it. Do you plan on seeing it soon?
I'll watch it. Yeah.
Good.
Some lesbian sex scenes, so yeah.
I mean, no, that's Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, that's Mulholland
Drive. We can watch that tonight.
I'll watch that too. Anything lesbian, I'll watch.
Give me all the cream.
In number 8, I'll kind of go into just briefly because I don't think you guys saw it. Little Women, the new Greta Gerwig movie. I talked about it last episode with Siri. She said it's her favorite.
The new Greta Thunberg
movie. She said it's
maybe?
One of her favorite movies of the year, along with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Knives Out. A shout out to her, but...
Also, if you want to know, we do have the Greta Thunberg sex tape.
Oh, that's disturbing because she's a child! You hate Greta Thunberg for some reason.
I don't hate Greta Thunberg.
I think you do, secretly.
I just think she has a stupid little Bjork accent. And her speech was dumb.
I liked the speech.
Made a fucking novel. I'm just kidding.
But Little Women, very good adaptation of the book. I kind of don't want to go into too much because I talked about it extensively last episode. But a very good movie that I highly recommend. Go check it out. Really good adaptation. Really good story. Really good performances. But number 7 is where we kick things up a notch. Ooh. With Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
And I'll let you start on this one.
Okay, so I watched Uncut Gems. I finished, actually, Uncut Gems recently, like maybe like 3 or 4 days ago, I want to say.
Yeah.
Fucking unreal movie.
Oh, so anxiety
loved
inducing.
It.
Now,
yeah,
I
very anxiety inducing. I said, I think I said to you after I had finished it earlier today when I told you, it was like almost like an embodiment of anxiety in a movie.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and the Safdie brothers, the directors, really good at that. I saw their previous movie, Good Time, with Robert Pattinson. Oh my God, that movie is like
so anxiety.
Pure anxiety.
It was so.
And Uncut Gems just kicks it up.
It made me so anxious that I was like waiting for it to be over.
Well, it's just crazy how he keeps going and going.
I couldn't even imagine being somebody like that. Like it was a really great movie.
Oh yeah.
It blew my mind. It kept my attention the entire movie, which is hard. I'll be honest with you. It's hard for movies to keep my attention at times.
Yeah.
You know, because like.
Maybe you have ADHD and you don't know.
No, I don't have ADHD. I'm just a fucking idiot. But the Uncut Gems was fucking awesome movie. Adam Sandler was amazing.
Sandler's
he looked just like my friend Nick's dad, Bruce.
We got to talk about how when
I sent him.
You said he looked like your friend's
just like him, and I sent him a picture, and I was like, "Is it Adam Sandler playing
too?
Your father?" No, he did. He never was late. He didn't look that Jewy, but he looked like.
We gotta talk about Howard.
Jewy.
Man, you're a Nazi on the podcast.
You know, Hitler moved an entire nation with his words.
Oh, cut it out.
I'm fucking with you.
I know.
Shout out Holy to the shit. Nazi party.
Okay, I didn't say that.
Do not shout out to the Nazi party.
We're going to get banned off Anchor FM.
No, but Uncut Gems.
Controversial podcasting.
Adam Sandler is incredible in that movie.
He's absolutely... That is... I was blown away by his... Yeah, by his role.
Even better than Punch Drunk Love, I think.
I still have not seen Punch Drunk Love. I need to really badly.
Paul Thomas Anderson. Oh, yeah. You still have not seen Uncut Gems.
No.
It just came out like in theaters like a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what are your thoughts on like the hype to it?
The hype, you know, I believe that when Adam Sandler wants to act, he is one of the best out there. It's definitely him just, you know, money laundering for everybody else when he's making Jack and Jill and all this other comedy.
Yeah, probably.
But I can't believe, like, in the same decade, he made Jack and Jill and Uncut Gems. Like, the two, like, opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Yeah, because that was a really incredibly well-played role.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and it's almost kind of like, why were you not doing roles like that?
Well, because he doesn't make money off them, I think. Like...
Yeah, but that's
kind
so
of the comedies are
shallow.
Well, people are not liking Uncut Gems. Like, not I know. Not critics. Like, audiences.
I've heard the same thing.
Audiences, because my theory is I think they're expecting, like, an Adam Sandler comedy, and it's definitely not that.
No, but I've heard people who are, like, not expecting an Adam Sandler comedy.
Really?
Being like they were going into it, like, oh, Adam Sandler's playing a serious role. Oh, this is cool. And then...
I loved it. It's weird, because critics were, like, sucking it hardcore.
Yeah, well, it's a good... I thought it was an unreal movie.
Very enjoyable. Juan's got to see it soon. And yeah, John is actually a pretty decent Adam. John actually saw Adam Sandler in concert.
Him and Rob Schneider both.
Yeah. In concert?
Oh, stand up, you know.
Oh.
Over in
I thought you meant like they're playing the accordion or something.
Actually, Adam Sandler did sing a bunch through that.
He does a very big part of his act.
Yeah, he does a lot of that in his act.
He has the Hanukkah song.
Soukas!
Oh, wait, we got to talk about Howard. You know, your friend Nick's dad looks like a Jew from Jersey, he said.
Is a Jew from Jersey. That's why he looks like a Jew.
Can we say it? We got to talk about Howard.
We love our Jewish people.
We love Jews. Just, you exist, so.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
Yeah.
Great job.
But have you heard about Uncut Gems? Adam Sandler doing a dramatic role?
Yeah, it sounds like something I definitely need to watch.
Oh, yeah. We should watch it later. And I'll definitely show it to you.
With a couple cold Smuckers on Crustables.
Oh, yes. But highly recommended movie.
How many Smuckers on Crustables do you think you could eat in one sitting?
Shout out to my mom, Honey Pants.
Honey Pants. Jacob's childhood nickname was Honey Pants.
Yeah.
Because he put a Smuckers on Crustable in his pants and let it melt. And he was super sticky from the waist down.
Well, oh, man.
Let's put a whole bunch of Smuckers on Crustables in the dryer and see what happens.
Wait, no, they will get crust. They're no longer uncrustable if they're drying, bro. Well, while he's out there, we'll
continue the role. Yeah, sorry, I don't know why he just, like, Lil Uzi'd out of the studio right now.
But he's standing right there.
Handwriting.
No.
Oh, number 6 on his best list is Dolomite, so we'll continue from there.
Oh, Dolomite. Actually, I gotta take a pee.
Okay, I'll start while you go take a pee.
Alrighty. Don't do Dolomite, because that's one of my favorites, too.
Okay.
So, I guess
so I'll let Juan talk about one of his favorites.
Well, we went and I'll listen to my clap.
I guess not.
No, it's picky.
Well, look, I'll let Juan talk about one of his favorites while Sam's out.
Alrighty. Well, I guess we can do... Yeah, let's do Knives Out.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the other two we can do later. Knives Out took me by surprise.
I loved Knives Out by Rian Johnson, director of Star Wars The Last Jedi.
It was interesting. I think it had a lot of those twists and turns. That's what I wanted from Star Wars, from Rise of Skywalker. Like, just something different.
Well, did you like Last Jedi better than Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah.
Last Jedi is actually a really good movie.
It is. It has its
flaws. It actually took risks.
It took risks. It has its flaws. But at least it did something a little bit different.
Rise of Skywalker just hit, like...
Yeah.
Like, Force Awakens, the greatest hits... Star Wars. Like, it literally, like, I've heard with Rise of Skywalker, they literally just took every, Star Wars plot point put in one movie.
Yeah, it was not good at all.
But with Knives Out, great murder mystery. Remember, I thought about, this was the first murder mystery in a while. I remember the last one we saw, you, me, and Sam saw it. We saw Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, yeah.
But this one's unique. It's not based on a book. It's an actual original murder mystery. But very well done, and I like that they made a movie about it. Do you want to go into a little more detail?
Yeah, a lot of it is based on like traditional whodunit structure, but it takes its own turns on it. So the problem with like talking about these kinds of movies is that you really have to see it, because details from the first few minutes come back midway.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil a thing, but it's like a Swiss watch. Everything matters in place, every aspect, and the ending is very good. It's a play. It's a good twist on murder mystery movies, and it's a good a way to kind of focus on that. I loved Knives Out. It barely made my list.
One of the interesting things is Daniel Craig, he's been stuck kind of doing 007, James Bond for a while. So to see him do something like this where he just has a southern accent, he just says random things, it's fantastic. One of the lines from the movie is, we ain't in a donut hole, but we're inside a donut hole in the donut. So there's two donut holes inside this case. Just like the most horrible accent.
I thought it worked in the tone the movie was going for.
Wait, what movie are you guys talking about?
Knives Out.
Okay, never mind. I have no hot takes.
Yeah,
you should go see it though. Good murder mystery movie.
Very good.
Sam wanted to see it just because it had
I do like Jamie Lee Lewis.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Who's Jamie Lee Lewis?
I was thinking, I got to mix up with Juliette Lewis, okay?
You hate Juliette Lewis.
I know, I hate Juliette Lewis. She looks like a baby bird.
What about Natural Born Killers? That's still a good movie.
Yeah, she looks like a baby bird who died.
Does she ruin that movie for you, or it's still a good movie?
No, I just hate her dancing. She's always dancing in that movie. She's always like, fucking grosses me out. She should just stop.
But I do highly recommend Knives Out. Go see it. It's in theaters now. Now, number six, my probably favorite comedy of the year, Dolomite's My Name.
Ooh, great movie.
Absolutely loved it. Did you see Dolomite's My Name?
I did not, no.
Oh, man, Netflix original, really good. It's basically about...
Netflix or Ridge.
And there's another Netflix original on my list. It's basically about Eddie Murphy being a star of a famous blaxploitation series called Dolomite. It's basically just how... The movie's about how it started off as a comedy album, and then it became a movie production. And I kind of compare it to The Disaster Artist, but I actually think this movie's better than The Disaster Artist. Because I think The Disaster Artist, you kind of have to have some knowledge of The Room before you go see it.
Yeah.
This movie, I did not know a thing about Dolomite.
No.
And it was so interesting.
I thought it was totally fictional until the very end.
No, all of it happened.
Yeah, I know, that's insane. And also that, like, you know, the guy that did Dolomite was, like, considered... like the godfather of rap music.
Yeah,
and he took it from, like, you know, just homeless people who were telling these old kind of almost like kind of like slave stories.
Yeah,
that are like,
well, I think it's so interesting.
Had a rhythmic thing to them. Yeah, and then guys in New York started picking it up, and it was really cool. So that was, because I'm a big rap fan, and that was a part that was like a really far
back. I never even
knew
that until I watched the movie, that he's considered the godfather of rap.
Yeah, that was really, really, really interesting. I had no fucking idea.
And I mean, this is like Eddie Murphy's comeback role, really.
Yeah.
This is after years of doing terrible family movies.
Right. Because that's like the 70s side of influence on rap. Like, I knew about like the real roots.
Sugar Hill Gang and the Grandmaster Flash.
No, well, I mean like the real like roots of rap in like the 80s with like Fab Five Freddy and guys that. You know, they were like the real pioneers of rap. But, that whole, like, even, like, the predecessor to that, like, I really didn't know that there was, like...
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was hilarious,
it was really interesting.
So, really funny movie, too. And, I mean, Eddie Murphy was amazing in it. I'm good. Eddie Murphy was amazing in it. He was so good. That's probably Eddie Murphy's best performance.
Malibu tastes like sunscreen.
sunscreen. But I highly recommend... I love Dolomite's My Name.
High SPF.
High SPF, yeah. A little greasy.
So, it's not final thoughts on Dolomite's My Name.
Unreal movie. I mean, it's on Netflix, so...
Check it out.
Yeah,
Danny actually loved it, too.
Yeah, it's a really great movie. It's a great attention holder.
Oh, my goodness.
It's incredibly so entertaining.
Much better than Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
Like, Disaster Artist, it does rely very heavily on you knowing about The Room, I feel.
Exactly. And I think the difference with Dolomite is that it benefits you to not know.
Oh, I agree.
You know what I mean? The Room, you have to kind of know. I mean, you could watch, you know, The Disaster Artist.
You could watch it
without knowing what The Room was.
But I think it helps if you
know. Yeah, I think a lot of the allure was... people already knowing Tommy Wiseau and knowing
he's such a mystical figure.
Yeah, yeah.
And I absolutely agree. And then what the hell was it? And then I also think about, what is it? It was a big passion project for Eddie Murphy. He tried to get it made for years.
Yeah.
Over 10 years. And I think it's so great to see him return it from after years of doing, like, Dr. Dolittle.
No kidding. And
Dad Daycare.
And then being so good. And also
his
him.
His first R-rated movie in 20 years.
Exactly. Him, like, you know, people like him who are so amazing. So, like, you know, so talented at what they do, and being able to have a platform to do those types of things is...
Yeah, and think about it. Eddie Murphy's been doing this for, like...
Well, Eddie Murphy's a god of comedy.
Oh, yeah. You know, he was 19 when he started on SNL.
I know.
And he left at 22.
Yep. And...
And he already was... He was 23.
Not to mention just the cultural influence, and also the...
Oh, yeah, huge.
The tsunami-esque wave of influence there was on comedy following, like, his specials like Delirious and things like that, you know, Eddie Murphy, yeah, like every, you know, living, you know, professional comic has been influenced by Eddie Murphy in some way. He's just such a monument in comedy.
Are you curious about watching Dolemite, and then do you want to say your thoughts on Eddie Murphy?
Do you want to say my thoughts on
Give Eddie? Me the thoughts on Elmo.
Also played by Black Man. Are they connected?
Definitely watching Dolemite. Honestly, I've been busy with, you know, school life. So
we're all kids in the early.
But have
20s.
You watched Elmo?
I've seen Elmo.
We're almost late.
And Elmo
recently.
Elmo has seen me.
Recently. You're in your mid 20s.
So I'll definitely check it out for 27. The sake of Eddie Murphy.
If you're listening, take a shot. If you've exposed yourself to Elmo at some point.
Well, I know the puppeteer did.
To the TV show or to the actual Elmo.
To any form of Elmo.
Any form.
Please be careful with that.
I am. That's, I mean, like...
Dream Girls.
Eddie Murphy is one of the first comedians that I watched when I first moved here, so I barely knew the English. And a lot of it's, really, like, relatable. You don't have to know the language. But, like, watch it then, and then I watch it now. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I know what I missed out on.
Yeah.
Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty, the top five.
Top five.
And you're going to disagree with my number five.
Which is...
Endgame.
Yeah.
Avengers Endgame is my five. I absolutely loved Avengers Endgame.
Avengers cringe game.
I loved Avengers Endgame. Amazing movie. Mm-hmm. Just... Okay, I'm going to go in...
We're going to award our first podcast a cringe award to our dear host.
Okay, I'm going to give it back. I'm not a huge Marvel fan. I've always enjoyed the Marvel movies, but I've never been a diehard. Infinity War and Endgame are the ones where I kind of took... I loved them for what they
were.
See,
this is all... I mean, okay, so obviously, within the context of the podcast, this hasn't been all that exposed, but obviously, we have an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
But between me and you with...
Marvel movies.
Marvel movies.
And really, but it's weird, because I'm not a huge... it's really these two movies that I love to death.
Right. See, Infinity War was one of those movies that changed my mind a lot. I loved Infinity War.
I
thought
too.
It really...
Well, but my thoughts on both movies is I see both of them equally, because, like, Infinity War is amazing build-up, and Endgame is, I think, is amazing payoff. Like, I feel like they balance each other out so well. And, you know, like, and even before these movies, I would have, like, agreed with you on your flaws with Marvel, like, they kind of follow the same formula, da-da-da. These movies, I felt, kind of took that formula on its head, because you look at Infinity War, how it ends. Thanos wins. Amazing. Like, totally.
Which is why I liked it.
And I just love the idea of the Thanos snap. Like,
also, that Thanos hentai didn't harm anything.
Oh, one time this guy spammed me with Thanos hentai over and over again.
Yeah, that was me. Oh, you're talking about this guy, yeah.
This Sam Hailstone.
Just in case you're wondering, there are a lot of pictures of Thanos' dick on just in case you thirsty ladies.
But I just love the concept of the Thanos snap, just wiping out half of existence. That's an amazing idea. Like, great writing idea. And then we talk about Endgame. Endgame, I thought, you know, it totally defied expectation, because when you go into Avengers...
You know what my favorite part of Endgame was?
Let me finish this first. When you go into Avengers Endgame, you expect a really traditional formula. They're going to get the stones back, reverse it, and kill Thanos. That's not what happens. Instead, what happens
That's exactly what happens.
That is not what happens. That is not what happens. Instead, they go to the stones. Thanos destroyed the stones, which was brilliant, I thought. And the fact that they kill him, but it didn't solve anything. And 5 years passed without anything.
But they still go back and get the stones and kill Thanos and fix as much as they can. So
well,
like,
yes, but they still... Bro. But the fact that it was a 5-year
Marvel-y.
Gap, they faced the consequences. And people died in the process. And you are right. They did eventually get the stones back and bring everybody
Nobody
back.
Cares about those thousands of Wakandans.
But hear this. why Endgame works so well, in my opinion, is it felt earned. Like, they went through so much stuff to get those stones back in to reverse it, and all the stuff they went through built up, and it took so much sacrifice. Like, Endgame was incredible. It just delivered so much. I loved Avengers Endgame.
You know what my favorite part of Endgame was?
Okay, before you go cynical, I want you to actually talk about how you feel. Objectively, what do you think of Avengers
Endgame? Well, let me say my favorite part first.
What?
So my favorite part of Endgame was when they go to Robert Downey Jr.'s house on the lake, and he's like, no, I'm not a superhero anymore. And he serves some chalky milk out of the carafe.
This never happened.
Yeah, he gives him chalky milk.
When did this happen?
Did I make this up?
Yeah. This is.
No, I thought it was chalky milk. It looked like chalky milk.
This is not in the movie. Okay.
Can someone please confirm?
It's not in the movie. I know it's not in the
movie.
No,
remember they sit outside and they're all talking.
But they're not eating chocolate milk. They're not drinking chocolate milk.
Eating chocolate milk. Yeah, it said he has like a little like carafe. Okay, and he pours some chalky milk. I promise you.
I'm not going
to
look
at it. It's in my head.
We'll keep it that way.
So now we know that Iron Man diets exclusively off of chalky milk and tendies.
Oh, boy. Okay, what about the best
Thor? You know Tony Stark's that type of nigga.
The best Thor line, I like a Bloody Mary.
Someone that sauced me a Spike Seltzer.
And actually, okay, what do you think of Endgame?
Well, I mean, it's been a extended period of time since I've seen Endgame, so I don't feel like I'm a great...
Admit it was good.
Admit it. Just end the podcast right now. Admit it. We're done.
just stop it. Yeah, compared to your standard Marvel movie, it was better. But it's because it probably had $100 million more of a budget. It had a way more
big... And the stakes were good.
I just felt it followed the formula of your standard Marvel movie, which is what I tended to test because they're incredibly formulaic and they're incredibly
repackaged. Time to get Infinity Stones is your traditional Marvel movie?
Yeah, there's shit like that all the time with fucking Marvel movies. Have you not seen Doctor Strange? There's a Doctor Strange element. A little bit,
but I feel like, I don't know, you can have a bunch of plot.
They'll throw little things into it, but I'm talking about the overarching formula. It was an okay movie. I enjoyed it when I saw it.
I loved it. I'm sorry.
I enjoyed it when I saw it.
You loved hipster.
I enjoyed Infinity War because I think it cut away from that cloth and did something that was more individualistic and not some sort of like mass consumerist silliness that Marvel movie tends to fall under, which is my beef with them, which is why Jacob is salty about everything I say about Marvel.
But you even admitted at the beginning I was more on the right than you are.
About what?
Marvel movies. You said that at the beginning.
I need the context. I don't.
Okay. Juan, you're probably going to hate on Endgame too.
I do hate it. It wasn't... The thing is, with Marvel, they've been very good at maintaining the hype during this first phase series, before Endgame and Infinity War. So they've always been relevant in memes. They've always been relevant in pop culture. And that's ending now before they make, whatever moves they're going to make in Phase 4 and 5. So when you have time to rest between movies, like now, you start to see, it's kind of formulaic. It's already kind of dated. Mm. The references they're using, the plot lines that they're using, they're kind of rehashing ideas that they've set up from the start.
They're probably starting movies like a few years behind.
Put that cap back on.
Like the movies come out that are coming out now have probably been, But you want that?
Yeah.
They probably started filming it like 2-3 years ago, and then the problem is...
Well, they finished filming a year before, but they did like reshoots.
But the things culturally change with the internet now. They're so fast that it's now things seem so dated when they come up. They're always constantly trying to patch it or something.
Which is kind of like the big problem that I have with like the Marvel cinematic universe, and I'll extend that to like TV shows as well. Basically just Marvel...
I don't watch the TV shows.
Bro, cringe.
Well, I'm supposed to?
Yeah, some of them tie.
I watched Daredevil, that was it.
Some of them kind of tie, they're trying to put it together. Point is, the visual media never really had, and even until now, I would argue, they never really had one continuous vision, one continuous director, one continuous writing team. It's always people trying to like scrap everything together.
And that's why it's very patchy.
And that's why people like kind of appreciate stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy more, because it's like that is one director's vision. That's James Gunn trying to do that. Unlike the original Iron Man, John Favreau.
Also,
that's definitely John Favreau.
It's almost like an entirely...
My name is
Shiv. it's an entirely separate lane away from the like Marvel Universe, which like they're had never been any sort of like branch of, you know, the cinematic construct of the Marvel Universe that touched Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, it was entirely new.
Ant-Man was a passion project of Edgar Wright, and then he left the project, and they just replaced him with some director.
21 Savage.
Which, but that just shows they do kind of see that, but I still love Endgame, one of my favorites of the year.
Yeah. Anyways, controversial pick.
Yeah, I love Avengers Endgame.
It's been a controversial pick. This is something we often discuss when we're like going to Wendy's and shit. So
yeah, it's number five. It's like if I put it at number one, yeah. I'd feel yeah,
because
Jacob about it.
Jacob will bring up his like top of the year movies like every time we'd see him. So like we'll end up having some sort of discussion about it. Like, you know, so this has been hotly debated. So this is the culmination.
Number four, we actually agree on. And I'll let Juan start this one off. My number four is The Irishman. Juan, you want to start on that?
The Irishman. Let me tell you, I think the lighting is fantastic.
It's made. The cinematography. Scorsese is a master.
Yeah, it's generally when you see what Scorsese, this is why I love him so much. He doesn't really change with the times. So you can always tell when it's a Scorsese movie.
Yeah.
You can always
tell
he follows. Like, of course, he follows, you know, new technology as it comes. But, like, his style never really changes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you watch Christopher Nolan movie, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy versus whatever's coming out, Tenet.
Yeah.
You can tell just completely changed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm still really excited for Tenet, but...
It looks pretty good, yeah. But, like, Scorsese, you can tell, like, it's not so much what he does artistically, it's more like you're seeing how he sees things.
Yeah, right.
So I appreciate that. The story is extremely interesting, just Jimmy Hoffa, just that entire timeline. Something that the movie really made a point about with Robert De Niro and choosing him as the one who like ages on is how important it was back then, but forgotten now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Just history kind of just erases you, and that's what he had to live with.
I gotta put it out there that I only watched half of The Irishman.
But on what you saw of The Irishman, how good?
It was unreal.
First half or second half?
First half. Why would I start from the second
when
half?
When did you stop watching? Like, what part was it?
Go backwards.
I mean, it's a very long movie, so you still watch a decent part.
I remember he was with Al Pacino, and they were like...
But at which point did you decide not to watch?
I think you just went to bed, right?
Yeah, it was... the thing that happened was I realized that, like, I was watching it, and I was periodically, like, going on my phone and kind of, like, not, like, paying full attention to the movie. And then after a certain point, I realized I was like... I don't even know what's going on right now. And I was like, okay, this isn't the right way to like go about this movie. This is like wrong. I got to redo this.
Eventually, so, Sam will watch it, and I think we should do an actual detailed episode on
Please
the movie.
Be assured, I will watch The Irishman.
But what did you think, what did you guys think of the two things I want, kind of the two big things people are talking about with the movie? The de-aging technology and the length.
So Robert De Niro, when they made him look young, and when he'd walk around, this dude walked like he was like his age.
That okay, and little.
It was
bit,
so funny. Like he'd be like, "I'm 30," and then he'd shuffle around like he was. Like,
but it's weird. The CGI looked so like I thought like
it looked really good, but it
like
looked good.
I do understand what you mean. Like
you can't mimic being a 30-year-old.
It's hard.
You know?
To, like Al Pacino, he said when he did it, he tried to relate to a memory of when he was that age and try to recreate it. So that's how he did it.
Yeah. Well, he shuffled around like he was at the country club that I work at.
Ooh, both of you got ignored.
Nord.
No, if you both do it at the same time, it'll get canceled out.
I think I'm fucking him up.
Yeah. We're trying to put the lights back on just for anybody listening.
So, Juan, what did you think of the de-aging?
The de-aging was excellent. And another point...
Better than Marvel?
Better than Marvel, but for a separate reason, because you have the history of De Niro, Pacino, Pesci. They've been in movies for at least 30, 40 years. We have different eras that we can like reconstruct the
face. Exactly, from. And it almost makes you like when you see that sort of like age, you know, CGI of like reconstruction of them. It almost kind of takes you back to those early Pacino and fucking Robert De Niro movies, like Casino,
Goodfellas.
And Goodfellas, and things like that, that you love.
Oh yeah,
and then. You know, it gives that nostalgia, especially since it's, you know, Scorsese.
I mean, and I think with the de-aging, I think it also helps the three actors in the movie, probably, they've aged pretty well in their old age, and I think that does help a lot, too.
Well, yeah, it's called movie Botox. Magic.
Oh. It's called. But like, it helps. Like that. There. It's
not, Robert De Niro probably looks like a fucking ball sack right now.
Really?
Yeah, laying in bed.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
But and the length, which I won't really. Sam can't really talk about. But it did feel like a 3.5 hour movie.
It felt like it to me.
Yeah, I think.
To me, I saw it in the theater, and it felt.
I think you should watch in parts, like if you like.
Well, me and Juan watched it in one sitting, and we were invested.
Yeah, wow. It's definitely that kind of movie where you can't. You have to be in the right mindset to just sit there and let it happen.
I know, but it's so hard to get that mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm not the type of person that can like sit through like prolonged period movies. Like, it's hard for me just to watch a movie like sometimes.
Yeah, that's
just
fair.
Sit there and do it unless I'm going to the theater to see it. Like that's the
and
event.
I actually saw The Irishman in theater. Juan was gonna see The Irishman with me in theaters, but I bought my ticket in advance.
Did you go by yourself?
Well,
I happened, had to. We went to the theater that's like by
point because of regular theater chains aren't showing it because Netflix.
Right, yeah, it was limited release.
So
they were playing it at this local theater in Bonita.
So he bought his, you know, like about a week in advance. I was going to buy it at the theater. And
they were sold out.
They were sold out. So I drove this man's to the theater and I had to drive back home. Just like a 30-minute drive.
But then I bought his.
Wait, how'd you get home? Did you take an Uber?
I took an Uber to I was meeting friends at the Olive Garden.
Oh.
I met Abby and Juan, but I made it up to Juan because I bought his Ford v Ferrari ticket because we saw that movie that night. Which is Bruh. That? Is that in your list too?
Ford v Ferrari. I forgot that it's in there, but I didn't like write it down.
Oh.
It's definitely.
Bruh.
That's in my honorable mentions.
Yeah, let me write it down now.
Number three. Is a movie, I won't really go into detail because they didn't see it. Marriage Story with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. I won't really go into much detail because I don't really have anyone to talk about it with, but very good.
Adam Driver gets his nut.
Excellent movie. And
finally, after that.
Finally. There's so many years, he gets finally nuts.
Well, okay. It goes all over the camera. Excellent movie about divorce. Really well acted. No cliches or anything. It's just very well done.
All nuts.
So investing. Excellent acting. I just cannot recommend Marriage Story enough. It really doesn't have much plot. It's just a story about a coast-to-coast divorce. But it's so greatly done.
If you wear Skechers and think going to the mall is sick, then Marriage Story is the...
Well, am I wearing
really,
Skechers?
You really undersold that.
I don't.
You are wearing Skechers right now. Oh my god!
I undersold it. What am
no,
I supposed
Sam
to? Oh, I go Sam. Watch Marriage Story. Nor Chris Duckman gave it an A+.
Just know that a man wearing Skechers recommended this movie to you.
The man saying that wears Birkenstocks. So listen, consider who you're listening to.
Consider it.
Skechers over Birkenstocks. A male wearing Birkenstocks.
Ooh, sexist much?
Yeah, what the fuck, bro? They're
only
unisex.
Women should wear Birkenstocks.
You're wearing Skechers Go Walks right now. Do not even talk to me.
This man is wearing his tech college hat.
Got him.
You're gonna talk shit about me about having a university degree?
I think you're better than a trade man.
But okay. So,
I'm in a union, you fucking cunt. Okay.
So number three we talked about. Number two and number one, we have a lot to say. Number two is The Lighthouse for me.
Loved it.
Loved it too.
Absolutely loved it. Yeah. One of my favorite movies of the year.
Just you cannot get better than The Lighthouse. It's just
Arg, matey.
Oh my god. Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson are amazing.
Have we put out there that Willem Dafoe has a 12-inch dick?
He does, according to Reddit.
Gigantic fucking hog on that guy.
He's good in Platoon. I mean, yeah.
Great in Platoon. You can tell he's got big dick energy.
He really
he's short.
Does.
He really does.
He's like 5'7". He's a short guy. Too.
He's a short guy with a big dick.
Mm. But I love it. The Lighthouse, the performance. Willem Dafoe especially was.
Yeah, he was unreal.
As the guy
from The Simpsons.
Robert Pattinson is amazing too. I still maintain that. What is it? Willem Dafoe is the most underrated actor of all time, without a doubt.
I actually agree with you.
He's the most underrated.
He's one
of
the most underrated actors
because he's amazing at everything he's in, and he never gets enough.
He
played Jesus Christ for fuck's sake.
Yeah, he was absolutely mind blowing in The Lighthouse.
Robert Pattinson was amazing too, though.
He was great. But as far as character playing goes,
he's so in depth.
Yeah,
and they actually have real facial hair too. That's all.
I actually agree with that.
I remember seeing I saw a picture. Someone took a picture of Willem Dafoe when he was filming The Lighthouse and he was like at a grocery store and he's like buying like oatmeal or something and he's like holding two bags like looking at it and he had the big beard like a crazy sailor and then like buying oatmeal.
But I mean, also amazingly filmed. Just beautiful.
Oh, excellently filmed.
And just the locations, the black and white was amazing. Mm-hmm. The aspect ratio was right on point. The
dialogue never thought,
was incredible.
I never thought I could hate seagulls more.
Oh my goodness. It was...
another thing to mention of the special effects. A lot of what you see like outside was very practical. Very 50s.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They really made sure...
And I love how psychological it was. And like, there's this one scene where he's... he's trying to masturbate, but he keeps thinking of like the spirit in his head, and he can't get himself to do it. That was a brilliant scene, I thought, and just that the ending. I won't say anything, but just when he has that experience at the lighthouse, that is just amazing.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it is.
Just the words cannot describe how incredible the lighthouse is.
Just to ruin it for you guys, so what happens is
no. Do not ruin it. Do not ruin it. I said a vague version of it. But do you want? I just can't praise The Lighthouse anymore. Chris Stuckman's favorite movie of 2019. I really have nothing to. I can't argue with that distinction.
Go check it out. It's
do you have anything else to say about The Lighthouse? Just an incredible movie.
Yeah, not really. yeah, it was definitely. It's a movie you got to see for yourself.
I think. Yeah, you
got to kind of.
Yeah, it's a movie you have to see for yourself. It's a movie that you have to give 100% of your attention. No expectations, accept it for what it is.
And it's not long.
Yeah, it's not.
You know, long. It's very entertaining. You know, it keeps your attention.
The chemistry between them is amazing too.
Chemistry's great.
They have so, like, the director, he says, like, the way the chemistry goes, like, they're so close to bonding with each other, but then at the last minute, they kind of recluse themselves from each other. That's brilliant. That's how what he was going for, and it works so well in the movie. Like, these guys, they almost like bond, but like a part of them kind of backs away. And then the director also said he wanted to actually show a movie. He said so many movies show how awful it is to be an alcoholic, but he says movies never show why people are like the joyous side. Yeah. He said he wanted to showcase that in The Lighthouse.
When you're stuck on an island.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, exactly.
The fuck else are you gonna
do? Remember, like they literally have like a buried stash of alcohol.
Yeah.
And then they run out and they literally just start drinking gasoline.
Oh god, yeah.
What? You relate to that?
No, I don't relate to that. I'm just like, oh, the Jesus fucking Christ, that'd be terrible.
William Dafoe was in a porno in high school.
Yes.
I just found out about this shit.
That one.
Yeah, he's got a huge schlong.
Yeah, that's the one.
Juan, do you want to finish thoughts on The Lighthouse?
Yeah, excellent. I think just as a general thought, in general, I'm really glad that Robert Pattinson has become such an incredible actor.
I agree.
Yeah,
like,
he really has.
I'm so glad he's escaped the Twilight mold.
Yeah.
Like, he started off, he's kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio in that sense.
Yeah.
Really kind of escaped that teen idol he was facing.
A new heavy presence, good works.
I know. And he's going to be in Tenet, too.
Yeah. I saw.
He's going to be Batman. And I actually think he's a really good pick, honestly.
He's going to be Batman?
Yeah,
he's going to be the new Batman.
Damn.
I actually think he's going to be a good pick. Now my number one. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yep.
Nothing but praise for this movie.
Can you slide me another spike cells?
How many are you drinking in one go?
This is my
fourth. It's like sixth.
I would say.
For the entire night?
Once
upon a time in Hollywood.
He's amazing. Good to broadcast.
Good to broadcast.
Okay. Once upon a time in Hollywood. Amazing movie. Tarantino's my favorite director of all time. And, he really brings it to the table here. Two incredible performances. Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt absolutely kill it. I love the atmosphere of this movie, how laid back it is until the ending. That's just a day in their lives. It's such a chill-out movie, but the ending, I won't spoil the ending here, but the ending is one of the best endings to any movie I've ever seen. No question.
Yeah, I think, I agree. I think the ending was... That was probably what, like, my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, mine was, too. But I love the first like 2 hours of it too. I just love that it shows a day in their lives.
Yeah.
Like, I just, and Tarantino, his dialogue is so good, you don't mind just chilling with these people. And it's just, I love how laid back it is. You know, some movies they like to say movies should be tighter to kind of have a better flow.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Well, that's where I'm getting at. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I love that it just gave it room to breathe and just chill out.
Right.
And it's so original too. Like, there's not any movie like it, and Tarantino's like the one to bring this to form. And I really hope they're saying Brad Pitt might be the contender to win Best Supporting Actor. If he gets the nomination, he definitely will get the nomination. But I hope he definitely...
I'm super excited to see what like the Oscar picks are this year.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do an episode on the Oscars.
Yeah.
We're going to do preconceptions and postconceptions.
Yep.
So, I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'll let you guys kind of go into your bits on it. I know you loved it too. It's on your list.
I loved it, yeah. So, I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when I was in Canada this summer. And I was wasted as fuck. And I think I was on...
So, you were like Rick Dalton.
Yeah, I was like Rick Dalton. And I think I was on Percocets. At the same time.
30s.
Yeah, popped a couple of perks, and I don't know, I was just being a dirtbag. And we went and saw it, and I remember enjoying it, but like I was kind of like, not like, I was just being, I really didn't grasp the movie as I should have when I saw it. And so afterwards, I watched it again, and I enjoyed it so much more. But I remember when on my initial viewing,
even that ending,
was the thing that stuck out to me, which
him
was
the acid dip cigarette.
Yeah, was which fucking
so
amazing.
Accurate. How he acts.
Yeah, I love Tarantino's sort of like manipulation of like the current, like the shit that's happening. Kind of like made it like, what if this happened? Like, what if Charles Manson
died? That's how
died
I describe the movie, like without spoiling it. I say, you know, the Sharon Tate murders. Imagine if it happened in a different way.
In a different
way.
That's
really the best way to describe it without saying what happens.
Yeah.
Like,
and the ending's fucking amazing.
Oh yeah. And I'll go back, but also how amazing it looks and how involved it is. It feels like the '60s, and no CGI was used. It's all practical.
Yep.
That's one thing to mention while we're like in the subject. Sharon Tate and just that entire, you know, Charles Manson perspective, it's always used as her being the victim, which of course she was, of, you know, what happened. But we never get to see what her daily life was like.
And I love that they showcased that shit.
This movie did that excellently. And when I first watched
it, like her at the party and stuff.
Yeah, the party.
And like how Tarantino described it, he wants Sharon Tate to be like, have an angelic presence.
Yeah. Like how you like broke away from the movie just to see her go to watch a movie of herself.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Like, it just felt...
I thought that was cute.
Yeah. It felt like they really nailed the three different ideals of what a Hollywood setting would be like.
Yeah.
You have a main star who's like declining and always changing. A constant star who's trying to move on with their lives.
Right.
And then the stuntman, the background.
Yeah.
Oh,
the people
who
make it happen.
Cliff Booth, just such a great character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
I think that's a really great insight from Juan's perspective.
I loved it, yeah.
Which is, you know, just showing the almost an entire sort of like yin-yang.
Like Sharon Tate was on the rise and Rick Dalton's on the decline. And then and
the dichotomy
again, Cliff is like just chilling in the back because he's a stuntman.
Exactly. Showing the uglies from all sides, kind
of. And definitely one of my favorite Tarantino movies. Probably my third favorite, behind Pulp Fiction and Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I would probably...
Inglourious Basterds is my second favorite, but very close.
Inglourious Basterds is my first favorite, but I think
Pulp
we have the same first top two.
Yeah, we do have the same first top
two. Yeah.
Which is pretty incredible. But Inglourious Basterds is like just a hair below Pulp Fiction. Like, it's but
yeah.
And but Inglourious Basterds, he actually falls.
What are you going in there for? Are you getting underwear?
No.
So that is that. So I'm gonna let Juan and Sam talk about their list, their top five. So I'll
let's do Juan's.
Bro, that's kind of cringe because I only did three. Because I only needed three. So started out with The Best of the Year. Lighthouse was on my third one, which we covered in detail. And Knives Out we covered in pretty decent detail, I think.
Chris Hemsworth's sweater.
Honestly.
Loved the sweater game.
The style was fantastic.
Sweater game on point.
Chris
Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth.
Oh.
Yeah. Just excellent style in the movie.
Great sweaters.
Wait, Knives Out?
Yeah.
Chris Evans.
Evans. The
fucking same thing.
I don't
One's know. Australian, one's from Boston.
Oh,
fuck
Boston.
All of them.
Fuck all of them. But yeah, my number one was Joker, so...
Ooh, society.
Yeah. Society, the memes, an excellent payoff. I think I've always been a fan of Joaquin Phoenix, so I wanted to see... Okay, this is not a diss on him, but he's always been kind of like the Joker character. Like, he always retreats. And
look at him in Gladiator.
Yeah, when you see him in a movie, he's you know, really committing to his method acting.
Yeah.
So to see him be a character who takes a natural sort of madness to society when he's already doing that, you know, in his method acting.
It right.
felt like a more natural connection to any of his
yeah. other previous Yeah, I thought characters. He was good casting, for sure.
Well, and the Joker is just an actor's playground. There's so much to do with it.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Like, look at Heath Ledger. Like, it just gives you so much material to work with. It's like an actor's playpen, really.
What do you think Joaquin Phoenix or Heath Ledger?
That's
Heath Ledger, obviously.
I'd go me. Heath Ledger.
I think it's obvious.
But Joaquin
choice.
Phoenix definitely plays it more realism.
I think.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger definitely plays it much more comic book like.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if you'll follow some DC storylines, but one of the ones they did, I think 2 years ago, they introduced the concept of there being three different Jokers. Like three oh, different really? People that played.
Cyber Joker.
No, is that a thing?
No, it was like. No. One that was closer to Jack Nicholson Joker, one that was Heath Ledger, one that was like Jared Leto-ish. But something that I noticed...
High-minded Joker.
Something that I noticed with that is this Joker, the Joaquin Phoenix Joker, is closer to what they want the new wave of Joker to be, which is someone who's a little bit more broken, someone who has a little bit more of a purpose, but it's still chaotic.
Okay.
Whereas the Heath Ledger Joker is just pure chaos. It's yeah. the early Batman
right, kind
of
yeah. Joker. Right, right, right.
It just exists.
That makes sense, yeah. Like yeah, there's more of a like a purpose behind him, whereas the
it
Heath Ledger Joker
really
is more about
backstory.
Being an agent of chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually do like in the Joker movie, they actually give him an explanation. Like, I mean, I know that's like always been kind of an appeal of the Joker is you don't know much about him, but... I feel like in this movie...
What's the laws of wearing sunglasses on a podcast?
Ooh, bro.
But in this
That's
movie,
cringe.
Yeah.
It, I like...
Everybody in the audience just cringed.
Everybody just cringed.
All the listeners...
Sorry,
just
cringers.
Alright, so, yeah, Joker. I like Joker a lot, but it is not my top 10. Honorable mention, though.
Yeah.
Taxi Driver
mine
is
too.
Better, and it is very derivative of Taxi Driver, but I still love... Like, I love... Taxi Driver is one of my favorite movies, so it's kind of hard to look at it objectively, but Joker's still very good. And from the director of The Hangover, it's yeah. crazy that he did a movie like Joker.
There is very heavy talk of a Joker 2, so I'm very excited to see if they actually follow Ooh. Through with it. And if they do, what are they going to do with
Joker 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Exactly. They could introduce a younger Batman.
Well, they did that already.
Yeah, but like a teenage Batman.
Baby.
We need a younger, sexier Batman.
Like an older teenage.
Yeah, someone who's like on the fence still
Got
about
it.
Becoming... who they are, and they see the Joker, and they understand that mentality, and they see how dangerous it is, and maybe that pushes them a little bit to actually become Batman. Something
It'd be
like
interesting
that.
To see the transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and Sam will go into his list.
All right, so for my top list, the problem is that I have a lot of the same as Jacob does, and a lot of the same as Juan.
Yeah, so just like
so, you know, it's stuff. Whatever. Yeah. But
yeah, just say the ones on your list, but go into detail into the ones you didn't.
But the difference is that I have a top worst that we have not discussed.
Yeah, well, we're going to do top worst next. Well, but like,
can I start it off after my...
I like a top worst.
Well, no. It's going to be like a new segment.
Okay. All right, never mind. Damn it. So, my top of the list is Lighthouse.
Yeah.
My list isn't really like no like, you know,
but
actual
Lighthouse
order.
Would probably be number one.
It's close to it, at least. Fucking loved Lighthouse. Willem Dafoe was absolutely...
Absolute mad.
His dick is massive.
Yeah. He's a gigantic 12-inch dick, and he makes a great pirate. So,
He is like the dude from The Simpsons.
Yeah, 10
and
out of 10.
And even My Movie Sucks gave it a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And that man is extremely hard to please.
Yep.
So...
Yeah, so...
If he gives anything a 10, you know it's
so,
good.
So, 10 out of 10 for Lighthouse. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, lots of sexy boys... Sharon Tate murdered people instead of being murdered, so that was good. Charles Manson wasn't in it, but the Manson family
was.
Well,
he was very briefly.
And they all got stabbed in the face, so that was cool. So, 10 out of 10. Dolomite. Dolomite was great. A lot of sass and fun.
Dolomite's my name, and fucking up motherfuckers is my game.
Yeah. If I were to see a Dolomite concert right now, it would not.
Oh, that'd be sick.
It would not really be that funny.
What?
you think that shit the stuff you sing was funny?
Not really funny. It'd be just entertaining.
Well, if it was Eddie Murphy, but if I were to see a guy saying that shit, I'd be like...
I'm thinking of Eddie Murphy doing it, not the original guy.
Yeah, but the movie was fucking unreal. Didn't realize the history behind it.
Incredible.
Really, really, really cool history. It impacts me personally, so great. Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. He looks just like my friend Nick's dad.
Shout out to Nick.
Yeah, shout out to Nick. Shout out to Bruce Ryan.
is that the dad's name?
Yep.
Have him listen to this so he gets a shout out.
Yeah, I'll send it to him on fucking Facebook Messenger.
fuck you.
We don't have him. This movie was pure anxiety. I was waiting, begging for it to end, like halfway through. It was awesome. And very stressful.
And just to mention movies I have not seen that may have been on the list, but it's just because I didn't see them. The two big ones are, I did not see Parasite, and I have not seen 1917 yet.
Parasite, I would vouch for.
I haven't seen that either.
Very strongly.
Yeah.
I have to watch it when it comes out.
I feel like, we're all at a loss because we still have not seen Parasite.
Yeah.
Parasite,
and I 1917 is another very
we're going to get a lot of smack.
Yeah, like, I won't spoil it too much because the movie you have to see, but Parasite is, I always like the touch of international movies because they stick so closely to every little aspect of
life. Is it an international movie?
It's Korean.
Yeah, Korean.
Oh.
It's
a Korean movie.
So, like, with that international feel, they're not so much trying to sell you on the style of the movie. They just sell you on everything that happens with those characters.
Right.
So every little detail, you feel like you're watching just somebody in their life feed cam, which I have in every
case,
of course. But but the whole concept of the movie was basically this rich versus poor mentality, without spoiling too much because it gets a little bit more critical than that. And it's just the filming, the style, and it's just, you know, a different country, Korea. It's a different take on cinematography, a different
subtitled?
Take. It is subtitled.
Ooh.
So you can watch it that way.
No, I'm cool with reading subtitles. Yeah, honestly, subtitles. I love a lot of foreign movies.
Did it get a big theatrical release?
No, not really.
No?
It probably
was mainly in, like, it's like a, it's going to be an Oscar contender, though.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Being a foreign as well.
Yeah, it's except, a foreign film. Without a doubt, really cool. It's going to get nominated for Best Foreign Film. Wow. But I think it might get Best Picture nominated.
Really? Wow. I definitely need to see this then.
Yeah.
When the Oscar noms come out, we will definitely.
I'm fine with subtitles.
Do an episode on what we like.
It sounds actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then, one more on your list.
So the last one is Midsommar, which we talked about also to an extent. I think probably covered everything. So, yeah, that's my list.
Right. 2019 was well, 2019 was a good year for movies, and now we will go into the worst right after this break.